we gonna do? We're all out of glitter.
Well, it's only been 3 weeks since it came out, but Heath Williams' debut album, Front Porch Livin', has already shot to the top of the country music charts. His songs have connected with country fans everywhere by telling stories about real everyday life in rural America, from fixing up trucks to barbecuing to doing crystal meth. And the man himself, Heath Williams, is joining us now this morning. Howdy, Heath.
How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thanks for being here, Heath. You know, I'm a country girl at heart, so I love this music. I mean, every time I'm in the car, I put on the song Taking Apart Bicycles in the IHOP parking lot.
Now, are all of your songs based on true stories?
Most of them. You know, I like writing about country living. Mm-hmm. You know, the folks you meet out in the small town, the farmers, tweakers who are missing most of their teeth who'll s*** your dick for $20. Mm. Just real folks.
Yeah, I've met some of those boys.
Yep. But then other times, you know, I just pick up my guitar and start strumming. And it just comes to me. That's how I came up with picking my scabs.
Oh.
Well, I got scabs on my scalp and I've been scratching. Spider eggs are in my skin and they're all hatching. I'm just picking. Picking my scabs tonight.
Yeah, excellent.
I love that one. Makes me want to dance.
Yeah, really.
I love playing that song live because you can always tell who's tweaking the most.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You should be worshipped, but instead, you're surrounded by a perfect circus of clowns. You should be worshipped, but instead, you're surrounded by a perfect circus of clowns. And worthlessness abounds because purpose isn't found among cheap talk and overpriced drinks, and men who think that money is the answer but lack the capital to pay you attention, pay you a compliment, or even wait for you to ask a question. It's typical aggression, pressing for connecting with the temple that they lack the capacity to understand, like a pre-programmed barbarian at the gate that can't wait for the opportunity to rush your altar and obtain the holiest of holies. At first he had you with his swagger, but every second that he talked, he slowly puffed it up. And I don't know if I believe in fate or soulmates, but I definitely believe in magnetism. And if he can't match your rhythm, then the oscillations of his pendulum should probably swing someplace else on this earth. Maybe he should start out at a storefront church. He is beneath your cathedral. He needs to learn to perfect the quality of his service, especially if he can't understand that you should be worshipped. Worship like an icon. Like a monolithic pylon surrounded by ionic columns and marble floors, because you deserve more than some jerk sitting next to you at the bar talking about he misplaced his number, could he borrow yours? Or sitting there flashing money, asking what would happen if he stuffed your pockets with 20s, trying to entice you with a commodity of which you had plenty, and if you had any interest, it was diminished by the quality of his verses. What type of maniac doesn't understand that you should be worshipped? Worshipped. But instead, he's looking at your skirt with lust. And classless men turn women into mind readers, and still some women believe that they could change him, could fix him, train him to get on his knees and meditate on him like a religion, give him the opportunity to rush your altar with hymns and a chorus, hoping he'll rise to the occasion 14 times like Horace's father. But why bother to try to change a brute into a priest if his level of exegesis will never be venerable, will never be memorable? He lacks the level of levity necessary to levitate your bacilla above the surface. And until you begin to perceive men's energy, you'll never see the degree of spirituality with which you could be worshipped.
This is the conspiratorial view of history as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
Oil shares on world markets were cheerful at the news of the collapse of the negotiations between Britain and Iran. But there's not much else to be cheerful about in that news. The British tonight announced they will hold on to the Abadan refinery indefinitely and use protective measures if necessary. A reminder to the Iranians that there are 10 British warships in the Abadan area in the Persian Gulf and a British air fleet in neighboring Iraq. I have asked Howard K. Smith to discuss this story, and we'll hear his report now from London.
Most Britons are interpreting Prime Minister Attlee's message of this afternoon to mean that he has finally adopted the line of his Conservative Party opponents and has decided to hold the Abadan refineries by force. Until now, the Labour government has favored holding on until pressure should be applied, then getting out to avoid trouble. Mr. Attlee's statement today, however, asks the refinery employees to stay on, to quote the statement, until reason returns, which apparently means indefinitely if the Iranians refuse negotiation. Interpretation seems reinforced by the statement issued simultaneously today by the Foreign Office here in London, saying that if order in Abadan were not preserved by the Iranians, the British would take care of it themselves. Moreover, it's clear to everybody here, the 10 warships now in the Abadan vicinity are much more than would be needed to cover an eventual evacuation under pressure, if that were still the Labour government's intention. The Attlee message represents a considerable change of policy for the government in another respect also. Hitherto, the Labour cabinet has sought to apply no direct pressure on Iran's internal politics. Attlee's statement now, however, calls on the Persian people to recognize, to quote it again, the harm their present government is causing, which sounds to most people here like a clear invitation to the Iranians to get rid of the Mossadegh regime. A couple of weeks ago, measures of this nature would have split the British nation politically. But it's a sign of how the mood has changed in the past couple of weeks that all of tomorrow morning's papers call these steps, to quote the Manchester Guardian, very good sense indeed. The conservative Daily Mail, which has until now bitterly attacked the Labour government, sighs with relief that at last it's clear what Britain intends to do. At the same time, the awareness is general that these steps can cause grave complications in the Cold War. One newspaper mentions the gravest of them, the possibility that Russia might, on the basis of her 1921 treaty with Iran, intervene if disorders should break out. However, whatever the risks, it seems pretty certain that the British are at one in being willing to take them. The feeling here is that unless the line is drawn in Iran, the unreasoning brand of nationalism will proceed to break up the Western position throughout the Near East and upset the power balance just where it is most delicately poised.
Those were the days, my friend. We thought they'd never end. We'd sing and dance forever.
Israeli media are reporting that the United States is getting ready for a military attack on Iran. Washington has apparently shared its military strike plans with Tel Aviv to stop it from taking any unilateral action against Iran's nuclear sites. According to Israeli media, U.S. National Security Advisor Tom Donilon has told Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that the Pentagon is seriously preparing for the failure of talks between Iran and the P5+1 group over Tehran's nuclear program. He said military action will become necessary then, but a senior Israeli official has denied the report, saying there was no such exchange between Washington and Tel Aviv. Last week, the Secretary of the U.S. Air Force, Michael Donnelly, said 15-ton bunker buster bombs have been built to target Iran's underground nuclear facilities. Well, to discuss that a bit further, we're joined now by Mohammed Marandi, who is a professor at the University of Tehran, who's joining us now from Beirut. Professor, thanks a lot for joining us. Now, I'd like to ask you your assessment of such news coming out about preparations for a military strike on Iran, especially in context of the upcoming November elections in the U.S.
That it was a matter of real concern that planted stories intended to serve a national purpose abroad came home and were circulated here and believed here, because this would mean that the CIA could manipulate the news in the United States by channeling it through some foreign country. Now we're looking at that very carefully.
Any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to a major circulation American journal?
We do have people who submit pieces to other two American journals.
Do you have any people paid by the CIA who are working for television networks?
This, I think, gets into the kind of getting into the details, Mr. Chairman, that I'd like to get into in executive session.
At CBS, we had been contacted by the CIA. As a matter of fact, by the time I became the head of the whole news and public affairs operation in 1954, ships had been established, and I was told about them and asked if I'd carry on with them.
We have quite a lot of detailed information, and we will evaluate it, and we will include any evidence of wrongdoing or any evidence of impropriety in our final report and make recommendations.
Do you have any people being paid by the CIA who are contributing to the National News Services, AP and UPI?
Well, again, I think we're getting into the kind of detail, Mr. Chairman, that I'd prefer to handle in executive session.
Senator, do you think that you named the news organizations in your final report?
That remains to be decided.
I think it was entirely in order for our correspondents at that time to make use of CIA agent chiefs of station and other members of the executive staff of CIA as sources of information which were useful in their assessments of world conditions.
Would you say that continues today?
Well, I would think probably for a reporter it would continue today, but because of all of the revelations of the period of the 1970s, it seems to me that a reporter's got to be much more circumspect in doing it now, or he runs the risk of at least being looked at with considerable disfavor by the public. I think you've got to be much more careful about it.
Volts of electricity. Burst into flame.
There is growing concern over members of the Afghan forces turning on Western troops, commonly known as green-on-blue attacks. More than 40 service members have been killed so far this year. The latest attack was on Sunday. An American soldier was killed in southern Afghanistan by uniformed Afghan police who were supposed to be friendly. That death is a tenth in just the past 2 weeks from such insider attacks. Though there is a long vetting process for Afghan citizens going into police and security forces, military officials say more needs to be done.
Legitimately, we ought to go back to those tribal elders and say, hey, you know, you endorsed this young man, and he became an insider threat, and we need to understand what went wrong.
The incidents are taking a toll on the trust between U.S. forces and Afghanis as NATO tries to train the Afghans before our forces leave in 2014.
Having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
Afghan government blames foreign spies for most of the attacks by Afghan police and soldiers against international forces. A spokesman for President Hamid Karzai says security forces will tighten the vetting process for army and police recruits to try to help prevent more attacks. NATO says there have been 32 insider attacks against coalition forces so far this year, resulting in 40 deaths.
Having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
Say you want a revolution, we'll get on board. We'll start a new crusade, we'll start a holy war. Don't need no order, don't need no plan. I don't need nothing but the stone that's in my hand. Stone in my hand, stone in my hand. I don't need nothing but the stone that's in my hand. Stone in my hand, stone in my hand.
Fight
fighter jets patrol the skies over Aleppo as President Assad's crackdown on Syria's second city continues. Fears etched on the faces of the residents who take shelter anywhere they can to avoid the warplanes. The jets, believed to be MiG fighters, have wrought untold damage on the city, pounding buildings and destroying homes, businesses and lives. Human rights groups say as many as 20,000 people have been killed since the uprising began in March 2011. The bullets and mortars raining down on the city do not discriminate. An Amnesty International report claims most of the dead are civilians, including children. But despite the constant threat, the rebel forces have held many parts of Aleppo for more than a month, and regime troops have struggled to stamp out the revolution.
Having some military training doesn't hurt if you want to go out and kill people.
You build your fighter jets, you drop your bombs, you kill our fathers, you kill our moms, kill our brothers and our sisters and our uncles and our aunts. And still I'm fighting with the stone that's in my hand. Stone in my hand. Stone in my hand. Still I'm fighting with the stones in my hand. Stone in my hand. Stone in my hand. All the love that's in my heart. And the stone that's in my hand. Runs the gutters, smoke fills the sky. Every son that suffers, every mother cries. So if you had enough and are ready for your stand, I'll be waiting with a stone that's in my hand. Stone in my hand, stone in my hand. Yeah, I'll be waiting with a stone that's in my hand. Stone in my hand, stone.
Booted from a flight for wearing a silly t-shirt? That's exactly what a 31-year-old doctorate student from Buffalo, New York says happened. Arijit Guha says it was his shirt that caused an airline supervisor to pull him off a flight, forcing him to rent a car and find his own way back home. This is the shirt that he says sparked it all. As you can see, it has a MARC, Department of Homeland Security seal. Around it are words bomb, Z-O-M-G, Z-O-M-G terrorist, and alert level blood red. Run, run, take off your shoes. Now, Arijit did pass the TSA security. It was the pilot and airline personnel that decided he couldn't fly despite passing extensive security. In his blog, Arijit details the whole ordeal, from being banned from flying to the searching of his belongings to the interrogations that followed. But he believes this is about more than just his t-shirt.
Why don't you arrange separate flights for terrorists, so if they is going to do this terrible behavior, let them ruin their own trip?
New York Port Authority is investigating how a jet skier managed to walk undetected through two runways, climb an 8-foot fence, and walk into a terminal at JFK Airport while wearing a bright yellow life jacket. The 31-year-old man's jet ski stalled and he had to swim 3 miles to shore near the airport. He was charged with criminal trespass. The Port Authority called a meeting with the company that created its $100 million anti-terror system.
After Friday's deadly shooting outside the Empire State Building, reports are surfacing that many of the victims may have been shot by New York City police officers rather than suspected gunmen. Referring to the victims, Mayor Michael Bloomberg said,
"And some may have been shot accidentally by police officers who responded immediately and while confronting the suspect and fatally shooting him. Unfortunately, there may have been other victims as well."
NYPD Police Commissioner Ray Kelly went on to clarify the mayor's statements, pointing out the wounded weren't shot directly by police, but rather were hit by bullets ricocheting off flower pots and other objects. Bystanders were caught in the line of fire after police had been notified by a construction worker that the suspect, 58-year-old Jeffrey Johnson, had reportedly shot former co-worker, 41-year-old Stephen Ercolino. When police attempted to approach the suspect, he pulled a gun, prompting police to open fire. The two officers that approached the suspect reportedly shot 16 rounds total, 9 by one officer and 7 by the other. According to Lou Palumbo, a former police officer and director of a private security firm, their actions were appropriate for the situation, despite the consequences. At least one of the victims isn't holding a grudge after the shooting. When asked how he felt about being shot by police rather than a suspect, 23-year-old Robert Asika was indifferent, telling BuzzFeed, "I guess, you know, stuff happens."
All of a sudden, pow, 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 and he drops, you know? Pow, 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 and he drops.
Charlie hollered, "Come on, boys, get out of here. I've just seen an awful sight. Put out the fire, call in the dogs. The hunt was over for tonight." One bright night, way last fall, Charlie and a couple of the friends come by the house and said, "Get your dogs and let's go a-hunting again." "Get my dogs? Well, I reckon so." I called out Bob and Bill. "We'll build a fire at the edge of the woods. They'll strike at the bottom of the hill." We was warming our hands and telling tales when heck broke loose in the holler. Old Bob's got a coon as big as a mule. I'll bet anybody a dollar. When I got to the tree, I shined the light. It was awful dark up there. When the light hit the limb where the coon ought to be, there sat a big grizzly bear. Charlie hollered, "Come on, boys, get out of here. I've just seen an awful sight.
Spring Valley woman shot in her own backyard by a deputy looking for a prowler. Turns out her injuries are more serious than first reported. Her family is furious, and today that deputy has been identified. Fox 5's Misha DeBono has been on the story all day. She filed this report.
She heard the shot, saw the
the
smoke and the fire, and that's when she turned and she said that, "I prayed, oh God, you know, don't let this hit any major thing."
James Morgan, the brother of 36-year-old Jennifer Orley, a disabled Navy veteran and single mother, accidentally shot by sheriff's deputies Sunday night in her own backyard. Sheriff's deputies were searching for an intruder in her Spring Valley neighborhood. According to the victim's brother, who shared these pictures from the hospital, the deputies entered the backyard without warning, didn't respond to her calls of identification, and shot her at point-blank range.
Old Bob and Bill treed one night as we sat by the fire talking. Charlie said, "Boys, that's sure coon. Come on, let's get to walking." The dogs were treed in a big white oak when I got there with a lantern. Charlie come along with his old shotgun. It must have been as big as a cannon. He spied the coon and pointed his gun. I guess it was heavy loaded. With a roar, the old gun belched aflame. To tell you the truth, it exploded. The barrel went right, the stock went left. It tore the woods asunder. It kicked old Charlie in the middle of the creek with a boom that was worse than thunder. Charlie hollered, "Come on, boys, get out of here. This gun's not a-shooting right. Put out the fire, call in the dog. The hunting's over for tonight."
Wide receiver formerly known as Ocho Cinco is making headlines again, but Chad Johnson isn't being recognized for football. Here's WMAZ with the details.
Miami Dolphins wide receiver Chad Johnson spent the night in jail on a domestic violence charge. Police arrested the football player last night at his Florida home after allegedly headbutting his newlywed wife.
According to WPEC, Johnson told police he and his wife had accidentally knocked heads. But when police arrived, Evelyn Lozada had cuts on her forehead from an argument at dinner that went sour.
Police Captain Dale Engel says during an argument yesterday, Johnson headbutted his new wife. Investigators say the argument started when Lozado found a receipt for condoms.
"We were sitting one night in Johnson's woods a-whittling with our knives, telling tales and bragging some. We got to discussing our wives. I tell my wife just what to do, old Charlie said with pride. I wear the britches around my house. Of course we knew he lied. My wife, she knows that I'm the boss. The noise in the leaves back there made us all turn around. There was Charlie's wife so mad she was tearing her hair. She grabbed a sapling and made one warp, and off went Charlie's ear. We broke and run with Charlie in the lead. She is worse than a grizzly bear." Charlie hollered, "Get on, boys, get out of here. There's gonna be an awful fight. Put out the fire and call in the dogs. The hunting's over for tonight. Put out the fire and call in the dogs. The hunting's over for tonight."
An ordinary
Wyoming man now admits to brutally attacking a neighbor's dog with a hatchet.
Yeah, the karate stands about to go ham on him.
Ricky Knowles changed his plea to guilty this morning, and as Como 4's Keith Eldridge reports, the dog miraculously survived.
The last time we saw the golden retriever Kona, he was recovering after nearly being killed by a next-door neighbor. Police reported it as a hatchet attack, or at least some type of hammer, that Ricky Knowles took to Kona's head because the dog had been barking.
This is horrible! He's killing him! He's hitting him with something! Oh, God! Hurry up, please!
Neighbors heard the dogs yelping and rushed to get police there.
This was a horrific crime. I mean, this poor dog was beaten in the head with a hammer.
The Animal Protection Group Posado Safe Haven crammed the courtroom as Knowles changed his animal cruelty plea to guilty.
Stop it already!
They can feel it and sure can hear it. A strange boom reverberating through the foothills. It's happening over and over again in Pleasant Valley, southeast of Placerville in El Dorado County. That's where Angeli Hemphill tried to unravel this mystery.
Well, people that live all over this area say they hear these loud booms several times a week, but everyone seems to have a different theory about what's causing these booms and even what direction they're coming from.
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps.
Sure, I thought it was thunder.
Definitely it's not thunder, it's too consistent.
Sonic booms from flying aircraft.
People who live near Pleasant Valley say their days have been interrupted by loud booms shaking the floor beneath them. And it's been happening for years.
Or you can feel it in the ground, no question about it.
But no one's been able to figure out why.
They tend to hear somewhere between 4 to 6 of these things during a weekday, and they usually run between 11 and 2.
Just boom, 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 boom.
And the rolling foothills of El Dorado County make it difficult for them to even tell where it's coming from.
Because some people out there in our nation don't have maps.
Boy, you got my heartbeat running away. Beating like a drum and it's coming your way. Can't you hear that boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, baby? Super bass, boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, baby. Super bass, boom, boom, boom. Can't you hear that boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, baby? Super bass, boom, ba-dum, boom, boom, ba-dum, boom, baby. Super bass.
I'm going to the West Coast for a moment. There's something happening that I've never seen. I've watched these earthquakes since the 80s. And look, if you'll look at the USGS list of quakes, I'm going to... Started down here this morning with the 6.6, the Malacca Sea. After that, approximately 28 minutes after that, we saw pressure build up on the top of the Ring of Fire and move over into Southern California. Now, again, it starts right there today at 15:33. That would be around 11:33 Central Daylight Time. You come up. Southern California takes the whole page, and it's still one after the other. You can sit here and watch them pop up, 3302, 3112. These are 2 minutes, 1 minute apart. 2 minutes. Right there's 38 seconds, right down the line. Let's look over at our Earthquake 3D. Now, this is extremely unusual. A lot of you guys watch these just like I do. You've got the links on our website. You go to the earthquake page. It's got all these links. But, guys, I've got this set back here a day and a half. I've got the magnitude set down to zero. Nowhere else do you see this, the quakes. You see these after the tropical storm came across here. But look, the Virgin Islands down there. I'll back this up. You've got to tilt this. It's unbelievable, like that, to see the quakes there in that one spot in Southern California.
Ecuador's Tungurahua volcano spewed lava and ash into the air on Tuesday. The authorities have evacuated the population from the surrounding areas, and people in the town of Pilate are already feeling the effects. Some farming fields have been destroyed, while animals and local flora are at serious risk.
At this point, the pasture is lost. We had some potatoes planted. Today I went to see them, but I couldn't get to them.
By nightfall, the volcano showed no signs of ceasing its activity. The Tungurahua volcano has been in an active state since October 1999.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
U.S. banks may be getting a break when it comes to late payments on their loans from the American taxpayer. A recent report from a government watchdog group discovered that nearly half of U.S. banks that receive taxpayer bailout money have not paid back the loans they received from the U.S. Treasury.
I would say, regardless of whether it's been paid back, and it's important to know that it hasn't all been paid back, there's also the issue of setting expectations. The government's playing favorite.
Of 325 banks still being sustained with taxpayer money, 203 have missed dividend or interest payments, with some missing as many as 13 payments since receiving monetary assistance at the height of the financial crisis. According to the watchdog report, out of the 707 banks that borrowed money for the Troubled Assets Relief Fund, otherwise known as TARP, only about half have paid back the U.S. Treasury.
Can't get no way, can't draw no pay. Unemployment getting worse every day. Nothing to eat, no place to sleep. All night long, folks walking the street. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Hey, guess what country is getting itself out of a financial hole by some rather draconian measures?
Well, Greece.
No, not even close.
Iceland.
They are putting people in jail. They are putting, like, prime ministers being indicted. They're going after bankers. They're, the people
really?
Said, yeah, I said, those banks were ripping us off.
Saw a man this morning walking down the street in his BVDs, no shoes on his feet. You ought to see the women curving in the flat. I could hear them saying, what kind of man is that? Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Debate in India over thousands of crores of black money being stashed away in secret Swiss bank accounts. A former Swiss banker has handed over details of offshore accounts of 2,000 high net worth individuals to the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks. Rudolf Elmer, a former employee of a Swiss bank, handed over two discs of information to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange in London. He says they have information on tax evasion by celebrities, business leaders, and even politicians from the US, Britain, and Asia, but it's not yet clear if there are Indians on the list. Elmer says that after years of watching the money laundering trade, he wanted to do something about it. He will appear before a Zurich court on Wednesday, charged with violating strict Swiss banking secrecy laws.
All the landlords done raised the rent. Folks that ain't broke is badly bent. Where they get dough from, goodness knows. But if they don't produce it in the street, they go. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
21-year-old man was arrested in London earlier today. A guy you could say had a bit of a gambling problem. Just how much money did he lose while working as a trader at the investment bank UBS? Just $2 billion.
At last, the long arm of the war is reaching out and closing in on you. You screwy wabbit.
Some play the numbers, some read your mind. They all got a racket of some kind. Some trimming cones off of people's feet. They got to do something to make ends meet. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Former chief executive and chairman of Anglo-Irish Bank, Sean Fitzpatrick, has appeared in court in Dublin, charged in connection with financial irregularities at the bank. He was charged with 16 offences. The charges relate to financial assistance given to six members of businessman Sean Quinn's family and 10 senior clients of the bank. For more, I'm joined now by our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds. Paul, can you first of all give us the details of Mr. Fitzpatrick's arrest?
Well, John, Sean Fitzpatrick arrived at the courts complex here behind us just after 9 o'clock this morning. He was put into a Garda van at the Bridewell Garda station and driven here. He had been arrested at 5:37 a.m. at Dublin Airport. He had flown back in from the United States in the early hours of the morning, and he met officers from the Garda Bureau of Fraud Investigation and officers working for the Director of Corporate Enforcement by arrangement. There was an appointment made and they met at Dublin Airport. Now, Detective Sergeant Brian Mahan told us that when he met Mr. Fitzpatrick, he asked him if he understood that he was being arrested under a section of the criminal law for an arrestable offence, and he said Mr. Fitzpatrick said to him, "I do."
Some women are selling apples, some selling pies, some selling gin and rye, some selling socks to support their man. In fact, some are selling everything they can. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
Secretary Timothy Geithner potentially facing criminal charges.
Geithner was the president of the New York Federal Reserve Bank in the fall of 2008. When the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and the White House and the Congress decided to bail out AIG.
Right.
In the process of that bailing out of AIG, many, many documents were exchanged. If you went to the bank to borrow money, you'd have to fill out documents. One of the documents AIG filled out said, "We owe X dollars to Goldman Sachs and we plan on paying them 100 cents on the dollar." According to Bloomberg, emails that came out yesterday say that lawyers for the Federal Reserve Bank said, "We were told to strike this from the form so that AIG would not reveal to the Treasury Department or to the public that this money was going to be paid to Goldman Sachs because that's a politically toxic issue. Goldman Sachs making a fortune, making 100 cents on the dollar with federal funds."
I pawned my clothes and everything. Pawned my jewelry, watch and my ring. Pawned my razor and my gun. So if luck don't change, there'll be some stealing done. Doggone, I mean the panic is on.
I'm Max Kaiser. This is the Kaiser Report as we count down to the first public hanging of a banker. Stacy?
Well, Max, the Wall Street Journal is asking, should crimes of capital get capital punishment? And the reason for this op-ed? Overheard in Midtown Manhattan at the lunch hour. Another day, another financial scandal. New regulations, prosecution getting hauled up in front of congressional hearings. Nothing seems to stop it. Another person responded, maybe we need to try something more drastic. Like what? Well, there's always the death penalty.
Old probation ruined everything. That's why I'm forced to sing. Here's one thing I want you all to hear until they bring back light wine, gin, and beer. Doggone, the panic will be on.
Many of us store valuable possessions in safe deposit boxes, assuming it's secure. Well, that wasn't the case for one local couple. On the Consumer Watch, Julie Watts tells us the family was surprised to find who took their missing valuables.
He showed me and I said, no, it must be junk mail.
But Unsa and Azad Kamal soon realized this letter from B of A was anything but. It notified them their safe deposit box had been drilled, opened, and emptied.
We just couldn't think straight. It was like, oh my God, my jewelry.
Family heirlooms going back three and four generations removed from the safe deposit box they were still paying for and sent to a holding center in South Carolina. The Kamals immediately called the bank, but say it took days before a manager finally told them it was opened due to lack of information.
They claimed they didn't have a social security numbers, which is not true. When they opened the account, that's something very basic.
We confirmed, in fact, the numbers were right there on the rental agreement.
They are responsible for keeping track of this information.
And attorney John Kivis says in over 35 years of practicing law, he's never heard of such a case.
Every national fiat currency is put into circulation through loans and debt. And so people today are starting to understand that there's so much money out there that people owe in loans, mortgages, credit card bills, all of these derivatives out there, trillions and trillions of dollars. And all that money has to be paid back eventually. That's where the lack of confidence comes from. And so when you start thinking and talking about alternative currencies, especially those that are issued in gold, silver, copper, and something real, some sort of commodity, people that understand the concept begin to realize that those are debt-free currencies that don't need to be paid back at some point to some bank. I mean, think about all the money that the people of America owe to the banks. Think about all the people that are in debt, all the states, the municipalities, the colleges, universities, everyone's in debt. The real question is, who owns the other side of that debt? That's where the lack of confidence comes from, the fact that people are starting to ask that question.
Check it down.
There's a piece in the New York Times this week that I think speaks directly to the inequality of accountability that we have here in America, a society that is relentlessly punitive on the bottom and remarkably forgiving on the top. Reporter Ethan Bronner detailed the growing number of poor people who are going to jail because they can't pay their debts. The problem is that cities strapped for cash are seeking new revenues with so-called user fees, not just in the criminal justice system, but for traffic and license violations or not paying child support. And when people can't pay, well, Bronner writes, Hills McGee, with a monthly income of $243 in veterans benefits, was charged with public drunkenness, assessed $270 by a court, and put on probation through a private company. The company added a $15 enrollment fee and a $39 in monthly fees. That puts his total for a year above $700, with Mr. McGee, 53, struggled to meet before being jailed for failing to pay it all. Minor offenses could lead to hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars in debt, which can lead back to jail if not paid. Cities are charging people for everything from probation supervision to the use of constitutionally guaranteed court-appointed public defenders. These fees are not to punish or deter criminal behavior, but to shore up budget gaps. When offenders can't pay these fees, they get a notice to show up in court, and if they don't show up in court, a warrant goes out for their arrest. Supreme Court ruled in 1983 it's unconstitutional to send people to jail because they can't pay their debts, but cities are getting away with it because they're using contempt of court to circumvent the spirit of that prohibition. seems to me that being poor shapes the outcome here, not culpability. And I think the great piece of reporting in your fine paper, you have this confluence of events. I mean, we're just talking about joblessness. I mean, there's a lot of people who are out of a job and don't have much money, right? So on one hand, you have more people with fewer dollars and fewer resources. At the same time, you have the austerity pressure being pushed down on these governments that never want to raise taxes. So increasingly, and I remember covering this in Chicago when I was a reporter there, all sorts of fees start to get added in because you can increase fees and say, and run for re-election saying, I didn't raise any taxes. Meanwhile, like speeding tickets are now $900 or something like that. So you have these fees being put, and there's actually a report issued by one of the groups that represents people that work in the courts at the state level saying, the courts are not a revenue source. They are not a means of extracting revenue from people. The courts are a fundamental part of our self-governance. And it's just remarkable to look at people who are actually doing prison time for not paying their debts.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable.
Dickensian, really.
It is Dickensian.
No food on my table, and no shoes go on my feet. No food on my table, and no shoes to go on my feet. My children cried for mercy. They got no place to call their own. Hard times, hard times. Hard times seem like it's yet to stay. Hard times, hard times. Hard times seem like it's yet to stay. If somebody don't help me, and I just can't be around free much long. No shoes on my feet, and no food go on my table. Oh no, too sad. Children crying for bread.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom. And yet you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is, there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
But don't worry, we're all going to be living on nothing soon enough. And, you know, with a little bit of help from our friends, maybe, just maybe, I don't know. I have no idea.
A teen child carrying a small sack approached the village elder and inquired, "If I had all the money in the world,
Would I be the most powerful person? The elder replied, currency has no intrinsic value. Its only value is in its distribution and acceptance. If you had all the world's currency, then currency would have little value to anyone else, and likewise, it would soon have little value to you also. If no one can use it, what is it worth? Monetary currency, much like electrical current, must circulate to attain its highest value. The words currency and current both mean flowing. This is the reason for the phrase cash flow and why the euphemism liquid is used in financial circles. The intrigued child said, I see. Then thought a moment. The elder smiled, closed her eyes, and sipped her honey, valerian root, and rum tea. The child then asked, if I had more money than everyone else in the world, would that make me the world's most powerful person? The elder replied in a dulcet tone, currency is a symbolic go-between for bartering. It is the equal sign between trades. Money is simply convenient. No one wants to walk around with 20 goats all day in order to do their shopping. If you want to trade your house to purchase an education for your child, it would be inconvenient to bring your house along to every deal. Moreover, the schools may not need a house. Currency allows you to sell your house to someone who wants real estate and trade the currency acquired for an education. Afterward, the college may in turn use the currency for something the institution prefers more, like more than your particular real property. The child responded demurely. Thank you, elder. I still do not understand why the most money would not make me the most powerful. Please, in all grace, explain. The elder began twisting her fingers, then ran them backward through her long gray jasmine-scented locks and responded, dear child, if a man sat on a 15-foot-tall mountain made of currency in the highest denomination, and the other man had no money but had a spear and a sword, which would wield the most power? If one country invested everything it had in currencies, and another country, with a fraction of the first country's wealth, invested everything it had in guns and food, which country would be the most powerful? The melba-toned child scratched his short, curly afro while gazing inward, and then asked, beloved elder, are you saying currency has no value? The elder laughed until the wrinkles on her face were barely noticeable. Then began twisting her locks into two ponytails. No, child. Currency, like all things, certainly has a value. It is among the most convenient resources. It simply isn't the most valuable resource. The 15-year-old child closed his eyes and asked, respectfully, dear elder, are you saying goats are more valuable resource than money? Holding back laughter and with glossy eyes, the elder replied in a raucous voice, that would depend on how hungry you were at the time. The elder began to yawn, signaling to the child that she was growing tired and signaling to herself there was a cigar she wanted to share with the ancestors before she napped. The teenage child, realizing time was short, asked his vaguest question. What are the most powerful resources? The ones that are above money. The elder sympathetically explained in between yawns, this is our last question and answer for now, child. The multiverse is filled with resources. Money is just one of infinite resources. Those resources that supersede fourth level resources such as money include 3, your network, 2, your mind, and 1, your faith in God. I do not have to convince you, young child. All I have to do is tell you. Though the child had more questions, he respectfully left a 5-pound sack of sage tea in tribute and exited the elder's lair expeditiously, so the elder might begin her 5th nap of the day. Yes, nap 5, her power nap.
Now, go find the others. .com.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, that dang old internet, man, you just go on there and point and click, 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 click. It's real easy, man.